notion that we will now have at least a truce in that trade war is a big deal, should clear the decks for the world economy to progress.
The U.S. and China hit the pause button in the ongoing trade war. It's Thursday, January 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also coming up, the U.S. House sends articles of impeachment on to the Senate. Democratic presidential hopefuls meet one last time before the first votes. And controlling a computer with your mind. It's all on today's VOA Asia. After 18 months of economic combat, the United States and China took a step toward peace on Wednesday. Emphasis here on a step, the first of possibly many. President Donald Trump and China's chief economic negotiator, Liu He, signed a modest trade agreement in which the administration will ease some sanctions on China, and Beijing will step up its purchases of U.S. farm products and other goods. White House economic advisor Lawrence Kudlow called it a major moment for the two nations.
This is good for America's economy, it's good for China's economy, it's good for the world economy. And the cooperation, U.S.-Sino cooperation, at least on trade and the economy, is certainly improving. We've shown it can be done. You know, is it definitive? Is it final? You know, we'll see. But I'm just saying, nothing like this has ever happened before. And that's why, in all honesty, I know you'll say it's my job, but I just think historically, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, this is a historic deal.
Above all, the deal is supposed to defuse a conflict that has slowed global growth, hurt American farmers and manufacturers, and weighed on the Chinese economy. But the so-called Phase One Pact does little to force China to make the major economic reforms, such as reducing unfair subsidies, which the Trump administration sought when it started the trade dispute by imposing tariffs on Chinese imports all the way back in July 2018. The U.S. has yet to reveal details of the agreement, though U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer said he would make them public soon. But what has been the impact of the trade dispute on the global economy for these past 18 months? VOA's Steve Miller put that question to Fred Bergston, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
The trade dispute has significantly disrupted the world economy and world trade. It has produced the first real trade war since the 1930s, with the U.S. applying tariffs to a wide range of goods from China, and China retaliating pretty much in kind. That has cut trade by double-digit percentages in both directions between the U.S. and China, and more importantly, it has generated great uncertainty in the economies of both countries and around the world. That has discouraged investment, discouraged global economic growth, and dampen the economic prospects. So the notion that we will now have at least a truce in that trade war is a big deal, should clear the decks for the world economy to progress more smoothly over the coming year.
Now, you talk about progressing rather smoothly over the coming year. What does that mean?
It means that economic growth, which probably would have been deterred by maybe a half percentage point a year on an ongoing trade war, will not happen. People can now breathe a sigh of relief, know that we will not have new trade barriers, which the U.S. had threatened if this agreement was not signed, and maybe even get a bit of relief from the trade barriers that have been posed over the last year. I don't say the decks are totally clear, because there will still be some uncertainties. There will be ongoing negotiations to try to deal with further and more fundamental issues, but at least the major dark clouds will be removed, and that will enable world growth to proceed at least a bit more forthrightly than without the agreement.
Now, there's been no set date for talks on the phase two. Does that ambiguity roll over to other effects that other nations, including the United States and China, may see in their trade moving forward?
There will be ongoing uncertainty in the overall economic relation between the U.S. and China. It's not just trade. There are technology conflicts. There are investment conflicts. There are potentially currency conflicts. The U.S. and China, who are the world's two economic superpowers, are going to be in a prolonged contest now for global economic supremacy, global economic competition. So it's going to be a somewhat uncertain environment for the indefinite future. What this agreement does is take the roughest edges off it, eliminate at least for the short term the prospect of further increases in trade barriers, maybe some relaxation of what we've had over the past year or so, and therefore a truce, not a peace, not a solution, but a truce that at least permits the global economy to go forward without the worst effects of the trade war of the past 18 months.
That was Fred Bergsten with the Peterson Institute for International Economics. And we'll have more on this historic agreement a little later in the program. Until then, you can get more details at voanews.com. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Pakistan's newly opened Gwadar seaport has begun handling cargo to and from Afghanistan, marking a significant outcome of Islamabad's multi-billion-dollar collaboration with China. A Pakistani court quashed the death sentence for former military rule Pervez Musharraf, declaring as unlawful the process that led to his conviction. Extreme weather in parts of Pakistan over the last 3 days has caused at least 83 deaths, with dozens more injured or missing. And Vietnamese officials say they expect to expand their economy by 7% this year. You're listening to VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. Well, more history made Wednesday in Washington, this time at the other end of Pennsylvania Capitol. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi appointed 7 House members who will prosecute the case against President Donald Trump at a Senate trial expected to begin sometime next week.
The emphasis is on litigators. The emphasis is on comfort level in the courtroom. The emphasis is making the strongest possible case to protect and defend our Constitution, to seek the truth for the American people. I'm very proud and honored that these 7 members, distinguished members, have accepted this serious responsibility.
Wednesday afternoon, the full House voted to approve sending the articles of impeachment to the Senate. The lawmakers who will act as prosecutors are expected to walk the articles of impeachment over to the Senate side of the Capitol. This after Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, signs, or technically called engrosses, the articles of impeachment. That is expected at any moment. However, what the exact parameters of the Senate trial will be are still uncertain. And if things weren't busy enough, Tuesday night saw 6 U.S. Democratic presidential candidates trading barbs with each other in a tense debate, attempting to make the case to voters in the farm state of Iowa that they alone have the political fortitude and skill to take on President Trump in the November national election. VOA's Jim Malone has that story.
A total of 6 Democratic contenders clashed over trade, health care, and foreign policy. And there was plenty of criticism of President Donald Trump and the recent tensions with Iran. Former Vice President Joe Biden.
We have lost our standing in the region. We have lost the support of our allies. The next president has to be able to pull those folks back together.
Biden took heat from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders for Biden's support of the Iraq war. And Sanders said he worries the confrontation with Iran could get much worse.
And right now, what I fear very much is we have a president who is lying again and could drag us into a war that is even worse than the war in Iraq.
A similar concern from former South Bend, Indiana mayor and military veteran Pete Buttigieg.
We can continue to remain engaged without having an endless commitment of ground troops. But what's going on right now is the president's actually sending more.
Some of the candidates want to reduce U.S. troop presence in the Middle East. As Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren says, it's time to withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan.
No one has a solution and an end point. We need to get our combat troops out. They are not helping create more safety for the United States or the region.
For billionaire and political newcomer Tom Steyer, it's time for a fresh approach on national security.
It isn't so much about experience, it's about judgment. If you've been listening to this, what we are hearing is 20 years of mistakes by the American government in the Middle East.
Democrats also jousted over which of them is best equipped to beat President Trump in the election. Warren sought to dispel the notion that a woman candidate would be at a disadvantage.
So, can a woman beat Donald Trump? Look at the men on this stage. Collectively, they have lost 10 elections. The only people on this stage who have won every single election that they've been in are the women, Amy and me.
This was the final debate before Iowa voters head to the polls on February 3rd to begin the process of choosing a Democratic nominee to take on President Trump in November. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Democratic presidential frontrunner Joe Biden says he would not meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un without preconditions. It's the latest evidence that Biden would overturn parts of President Trump's outreach to Pyongyang. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. While Washington was busy tying itself into knots this week, Moscow seemed intent on beating it to the punch. The TASS news agency reports that Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev submitted his resignation to President Vladimir Putin. Putin asked the members of Medvedev's cabinet to keep working until a new cabinet is formed. Medvedev's resignation followed Putin's annual State of the Nation address earlier on Wednesday. During his speech, the Russian leader proposed amending the Constitution to increase the powers of prime ministers and cabinet members. You're listening to VOA Asia. This Asia News updates, the treason trial of Cambodian opposition leader Ken Soka opened Wednesday, more than 2 years after his arrest in a case decried by his family as a farce. This is VOA Asia. Visit us on VOA Asia Facebook.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series. Education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
VOA Asia continues. Now, as we mentioned earlier, the Trump administration is hailing the Phase 1 trade deal between the United States and China as a, quote, huge step forward in establishing a long-term trade relationship between two of the world's biggest economies. China is also one of the largest buyers of some U.S. agricultural products. While American farmers welcome the Phase 1 deal as a step toward ending the trade war with China, they are concerned over how it will be implemented, as Kane Faribault found out when he visited a farm in Illinois.
Just before farmer Evan Hultin started planting crops in his fields outside Princeton, Illinois last March, he made a risky decision not to grow soybeans. He was losing money on the crop, subject to tariffs amid the escalating trade war with China.
No beans this year for us. After about 3 months of the trade war, it was pretty clear that the president had long-term goals in mind. And at the time, my dad and I talked, and we were way more comfortable with our ability to produce high-yield corn.
Today, a month after harvesting his corn, and almost a year after making the decision to skip soybeans, Hultin has no regrets.
For harvestability, this wet fall and late fall, corn was a lot easier to handle than trying to get beans out. So in the end, I'm going to stick with it, whether it was maybe the right thing or not. But
even though he still has a few months before his tractors are back in the fields, this year will be different.
We're going to move back to some beans. Now that the market's hanging in the mid-$9 range rather than the upper 7s and lower 8s a year ago, I'm much more confident in our ability to be profitable at those prices.
Those soybean prices are affected by reports the Phase 1 trade agreement between the U.S. and China will curb tariffs and increase U.S. agricultural exports from current levels, according to President Trump, up to as much as $40 billion annually. The potential jump is welcome news for trade war-weary farmers like Hultin.
I'd say overjoyed to hear some positive news on that front. But, yeah, I think cautious optimism is definitely the best way to describe my feelings.
Illinois Farm Bureau senior economist Mike Dougherty says Hultin's caution is well-placed.
There's doubt out there whether they can reach $40 billion. That would be a big increase because to get to $40 billion, you'd have to buy a lot of U.S. soybeans. You'd have to buy such a quantity of soybeans, it looks like China would almost have to back off their soybean purchases from Brazil. And that doesn't seem real likely they'd want to do that.
But Dougherty says China also needs U.S. crops to support its growing population and expanding middle class.
That's what was driving demand before. It wasn't a trade agreement with China. It was simply their market supply and demand is what was the primary driver of selling U.S. and Illinois soybeans to China. And we'd like to get back to that market-driven demand.
Evan Hultin would also like to get back in business with China and, under Phase 1, sell more of the corn and soybeans he grows on his farm this year. But he's not quite ready to bet the farm on it.
We still know there's a delicate balance here, and China's still China. So, yeah, I think it's going to take some hard evidence before we really shake some of the stress that we felt from this issue.
An issue Hultin hopes the United States and China can avoid once they finalize a permanent long-term trade agreement. Kane Faerbaugh, VOA News, Princeton, Illinois.
This news break from VOA Asia, the possibility that a new virus in central China could spread between humans cannot be ruled out, though the risk of transmission at the moment appears to be low, said Chinese officials on Wednesday. Visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, China is using its economic and diplomatic leverage to silence critics abroad and undermine international human rights. That according to the 2020 Human Rights Watch World Report. Researcher Ya-Chi Wang and Kenneth Roth said the report, which examines about 100 countries, claims that Beijing's efforts not only suppress the rights of its citizens, but extend far beyond its borders. Jesusima Oni has more.
After an English Premier League player posted messages online criticizing China's policy towards its minority Uyghur Muslims, Beijing canceled the broadcast of his team's match, a warning shot from the league's most lucrative market. It's just one of the ways China is using its economic influence to suppress free speech worldwide, according to a Human Rights Watch report.
China has been harassing, intimidating any kind of activities and speeches that criticize China's human rights record in the UN. Around the world, in different countries, China has been censoring speech that criticize the Chinese government, using its economic and diplomatic leverage.
According to the Human Rights Watch 2020 World Report, China, under President Xi Jinping's leadership, has tightened its grip over sectors of society it found threatening, such as the internet, activists, and religious groups.
This is the most severe period of repression that we've seen in decades in China, probably going back to, you know, the Cultural Revolution or an era like that. Xinjiang is the worst, where, you know, a million or more Uyghur and Turkic Muslims are in detention for forced indoctrination, basically to pressure them to renounce Islam and their cultural traditions and even their language.
Kenneth Roth, executive director of the group, was barred Sunday from entering Hong Kong, where he planned to release this year's report. The Chinese government called it punishment for the group's support for pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong.
These groups tried by all means to instigate people to engage in extreme violent crimes, incite Hong Kong independence and separatist activities. These organizations are held responsible for the current unrest in Hong Kong and should be punished and pay their due prices.
Several countries have publicly criticized China for human rights violations, but stopped short of taking concrete measures against Beijing, including the West, where domestic issues like Brexit have diverted attention.
Traditionally, countries that have been strong on human rights have not said enough about the human rights situations in China. And other countries who are authoritarian, autocratic themselves, because, as I said, the economic ties with China, they have been mum about, you know, the severe repression in Xinjiang and other human rights violations in China.
While the United States has imposed sanctions on some Chinese companies and officials tied to Chinese repression, rights advocates say U.S. President Donald Trump's embrace of President Xi Jinping and the U.S. policy of separating families at the U.S.-Mexico border have damaged U.S. credibility on human rights issues. Jason Samelny, VOA News, Washington.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists in Chicago discovered the oldest solid material ever found on Earth, trapped inside a meteorite that fell in Australia 50 years ago. What they found are grains of stardust, microscopic remnants of stars that died billions of years ago that can go on to help form new stars, planets, or other objects like meteorites. The ancient bits of stardust are actually tiny grains of pre-solar silicon carbide that were created long before our sun formed 4.6 billion years ago. To determine the age of the stardust, the scientists measured its exposure to high-energy cosmic rays that fly through the galaxy. Using that dating technique, the researchers found the grains of stardust are between 4.6 to 7 billion years old. The scientists' findings were published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And revisiting our top story at this hour, declaring, quote, "It doesn't get any bigger than this," President Donald Trump, alongside Chinese Vice Premier Liu He, signed an initial deal to resolve what had been an escalating 18-month trade dispute between the world's two largest economies. "This is the biggest deal that anyone's seen," unquote, declared Mr. Trump, who predicted it will lead to stable peace throughout the world. At Wednesday's lengthy ceremony in the White House East Room, Vice Premier Liu He read a letter from Chinese President Xi Jinping, which said that in the next step, the two sides need to implement the agreement in earnest. Liu, in his own remarks, noted that there were setbacks during the process, but negotiators for both countries did not give up. The United States and China agreed to what they're calling the Phase One Agreement in mid-December. It calls for China to boost its purchases of U.S. goods, halt the practice of forcing foreign companies to transfer technology, and to not manipulate its currency in order to make its exports cheaper. Well, that is VOA Asia as we speak. It's been a busy day. We hope you will be back with us again tomorrow. We'll be here. Until then, be well.